Oh, then tell me, Sean O'Farrell, tell me why you hurry so. Hush, you vocal, hush and listen, and his cheeks were all aglow. I bear orders from the captain, get you ready quick and soon, for the pikes must be together by the rising of the moon. By the rising of the moon, by the rising of the moon, for the pikes must be together by the rising of the moon. Oh, then tell me, Sean O'Farrell, where the gathering is to be. In the old spot by the river, right well known to you and me. One more bore for signal token, whistle up the marching tune, for your pike upon your shoulder by the rising of the moon. By the rising of the moon, by the rising of the moon, with your pike upon your shoulder by the rising of the moon. Out from many a mud wall cabin eyes were watching through the night. Many a manly chest was throbbing for the blessed warning light. Farmers passed along the valleys like the man she's lonely crew.
Greetings from the Northwest homeland, comrades. It's October the 20th, 2011. I'm Harold Covington, and this is Radio Free Northwest.
There beside the singing river, the dark mass of men were seen. Far above their shining weapons, on their own beloved green. Death to every foe and traitor, forward strike the marching tune.
In a minute or so, Axis Sally and I are going to have a natter about the Occupy Wall Street business going on around the country. But before we do, I'd like to tell you a little story on the subject of Axis Sally. Now, she's become extremely popular with our listeners here on Radio Free Northwest, and she's probably the strongest draw that the show has right now. But we did have this one guy who got absolutely hysterical over Sally, and I mean, it was one of the wildest and most wigged out letters or emails like this I've ever received, even from back in the day before email. Now, this individual has been on the fringes of my various efforts for quite a long time, and he pays his dues, $120 check once a year, in order to buy himself bitching and moaning rights, and that is his expression, not mine. Now, this is one of these guys who is constantly telling me how I ought to be doing things, but who violently and rudely refuses all of my suggestions and invitations down through the years to step forward and show me what I'm doing wrong, rather than sitting there behind the scenes telling me all about how I'm screwing it all up in great detail. Now, he's not the only guy who likes to tell me all about how I'm doing it all wrong and who's willing to pay for the privilege. And I'd pretty much written him off as one of these individuals who's never going to do anything but sit behind me in the darkness and carp. Okay, like he says, for $120 a year, he's bought that privilege, up to a point. But a couple of weeks ago, he just went utterly batshit over Axis Sally. I mean, completely off the rails. And he sent me this long, freaky email, the upshot of which was that he demanded that I cast her into outer darkness and exorcise her with bell, book, and candle, for she is the whore of Babylon and the beast whose number is 666, so forth and so on. You know, the sort of thing that Willard and Scott Spidell usually say about me. Now, I suppose that Sally should be congratulated, since she now has her first movement lunatic who's convinced that she's the daughter of Satan. It's some kind of bizarre rite of passage all movement people have to go through, I think. Anyway, I sent this person back a rather puzzled email saying, no, I'm not going to do that, but let me ask you something. You've been on my case for years now. Nothing I do ever seems to please you. Every time I hear from you, it's to tell me all about how no, I'm doing it all wrong. I should be standing up on a picnic table in a park wearing a cape and haranguing the pigeons or whatever, yada, yada, yada. Oh, I forgot. I shouldn't say that either. I had another idiot call me a Jew because I said yada, yada, yada once on this program. Anyway, I asked this guy, since according to you, nothing I've been doing for the past 10 years is right. I'm screwing up right, left, and center. I'm just a total slacker, loser, etc. And now you're threatening to leave me forever if I don't throw Sally under the bus at your command. Let me ask you, just why the hell haven't you left before? Why have you stuck around so long? And after a couple of days, he sent me back a sullen reply, because the Northwest Front is the only game in town. He's right. We are.
We're the good guys. One day we're going to kill all the dirty niggers and the Jews, and everything's going to be neat.
We've had some emails piling up here for the past few weeks, and so Sally and I are going to get around to some of those.
Okay, we have one from someone called Inkhammer. Dear Mr. Covington, what do you think about the Occupy Wall Street movement? I know they are lefty and hippy-dippy scum, but they are at least getting out in the street and doing something besides yakking to each other on the internet.
Yeah, what they are basically is Obama's re-election campaign getting kicked off. A lot of these outfits that are putting these people in the streets are connected with the old ACORN. ACORN was the liberal, nigger, lefty, hippy-dippy group that more or less marshaled the vote for Obongo back in 2008, and then they got caught doing all kinds of illegal things, and they had to disband. And so I knew that come the 2012 election, they would reappear, and there they are, as Occupy Wall Street. Basically, you got a few hippy-dippy 60s retreads in there, but it's pretty much the same lefty crowd that's been running the periphery of the Democratic Party for many years. I actually pulled their demands off the internet, and you can see from what they are allegedly demanding from the billionaires of Wall Street that it's basically the usual suspects we've been dealing with for the past 50 years. In theory, they're supposed to be occupying Wall Street so that the rich billionaires who are hoarding all the wealth are going to share. Yeah, like that's going to happen.
Okay, demand number one is restoration of the living wage. This demand can only be met by ending free trade by reimposing trade tariffs on all imported goods entering the American market to level the playing field for domestic family farming and domestic manufacturing, as most nations that are dumping cheap products onto the American market have radical wage and environmental regulation advantages. Another policy that must be instituted is to raise the minimum wage to $20 an hour.
Well, okay, now that first part of that makes a little bit of sense. They do have a point there in that I'm sure everybody here knows that nowadays we hardly make anything or repair anything in America these days. I'm having trouble with my printer right now, and I don't know if I'm going to actually even be able to get it fixed. It's probably going to be cheaper and less trouble just to go down to Staples or Best Buy or someplace and buy another cheap piece of Chinese junk. So they have a point there, but then they tack on that, oh, you want to raise the minimum wage to $20 an hour. Well, okay, that sounds good, but let's face it, there's a lot of labor that's needed, but frankly, it isn't worth $20 an hour. These lefties just have no idea of the reality of economics.
Demand number two, institute a universal single-payer healthcare system. To do this, all private insurers must be banned from the healthcare market, as their only effect on the health of patients is to take money away from doctors, nurses, and hospitals, preventing them from doing their jobs, and hand that money to Wall Street investors.
Well, again, it sounds nice, but the thing is, if you automatically banned all private healthcare insurance companies, which, of course, the administration would love to do, basically, the only reason they went for Obamacare a few years ago is because they knew that they wouldn't be able to get away from just terminating all private health insurance. But if you did that, for one thing, you'd create massive unemployment because there's probably over a million people in this country who work in one way or the other for private health insurers. And so, again, these lefties just have no idea about the economic reality of what their theoretical demands involve. Now, the Democrats and the lefty libs in this country want a single-payer health system, and considering the complete inability of the Republicans or anybody else to resist them effectively, that's probably what we're going to end up having. But what they're trying to do with Obamacare is phase out and bleed out all of the private health insurers. And along about 2020, once the private health insurance industry has collapsed due to the fact that they're being forced to take on people with pre-existing conditions, et cetera, then they can get their single-payer system. So these Occupy Wall Street idiots are probably going to get that eventually.
Demand number three is guaranteed living wage income regardless of employment.
Well, who's going to pay for all this? I would love to be able to just, you know, sit here and draw some kind of check from the government like I was a nigger. And that basically is what we've had a whole generation of niggers or several generations of niggers, actually, and a couple of generations of Mexicans doing. And you see this in Europe. You have a permanent underclass where you have two and three generations of, I hate to say it, white people who have grown up in these big housing estates run by the labor government and lived under socialism all their life and gotten the free medical care and gotten the dole all their life. And the fact is, eventually, even under socialism, with all the little tricks that socialism pulls, and even when you got friends like Ben Bernanke at the Federal Reserve and you're printing off all the money you want, eventually it just runs out of money, or else the money becomes worthless. Social welfare states don't work because, as Margaret Thatcher once said, eventually you run out of other people's money.
Demand number four is free college education.
Well, that's actually in our Northwest Constitution, and in an all-white country where everyone will have some kind of gainful employment, if nothing else, thanks to the National Labor Service, which is based on National Socialism, by the way, in Hitler's Germany. In an all-white country, a free college education or other training, not necessarily, you know, a liberal arts degree, but free higher education for the population is actually not an expense. It's an investment that society needs to make in its own people. But again, this applies to an all-white society where everybody is working and everybody is contributing, not to a multiracial cesspool like the United States and Western Europe, where you've got millions and millions and millions of non-whites just living off the white man.
And demand number five, begin a fast-track process to bring the fossil fuel economy to an end while at the same time bringing the alternative energy economy up to energy demand.
Well, maybe. That's possible. As I've mentioned in some of my novels, the Northwest Republic, when we get independence, is going to have to do something to provide energy for our society and for our industrial and personal needs, and we probably are not going to have much in the way of petroleum imports. Now, in a small country, a relatively smaller country such as we will be, alternatives such as methane, alcohol, wind power, solar power, etc. might be practical. It could be practical for the United States as a whole, but then again, you have your oil companies down in Houston and your big energy conglomerates and your Enron and whatnot, like they're going to let this happen. I mean, there have been repeated instances of guys coming up with patents for effective alcohol-burning internal combustion engines, methane internal combustion engines. There supposedly was a guy that actually invented an internal combustion engine that could actually run on water by breaking down the oxygen and the hydrogen and combining them to make them explode in the piston chamber, kind of like the way the Hindenburg went up, because gaseous hydrogen and oxygen is an explosive mixture. And this guy was bought out for a couple of $1 million, and his patent was never seen again. Look, the left has a few things right, and one of them being that capitalism in the American form is not very nice. So you've got these lefty weirdos and Obama the nigger in the White House on one hand, and you've got these guys in the suits down in Houston and their energy conglomerates on the other hand, and between them they're just tearing the country apart. But yeah, energy self-sufficiency is not only necessary, it's possible, but there are too many people these days with vested interests in the existing system.
Demand number six, $1 trillion in infrastructure, water, sewer, rail, roads, and bridges, and electrical grid spending now.
All right, well, infrastructure, obviously, we need when you've got bridges collapsing like that one in Minneapolis did. And here in this part of the world, we do have a problem every winter with power failures when the wind blows trees over and knocks down the electrical lines, and turns out our 60- or 70-year-old electric grid isn't quite up to snuff. So, again, these demands that these people are making sound reasonable in themselves. It's like all forms of communism, Marxism, or socialism. A lot of times their analysis of the problem is pretty much spot on. It's just their solutions that are weird. What we're doing here, by the way, to remind you, is these are the demands of the Occupy Wall Street crowd that I pulled off the internet. So here's where we're starting to get into the weird part.
Demand number seven, $1 trillion in ecological restoration. Planting forests, reestablishing wetlands and the natural flow of river systems, and decommissioning all of America's nuclear power plants.
Once we pull the plug on all the nuclear power plants, who's going to make up the gap in the available amount of electricity? This is not something that can be done overnight. Nuclear power is perfectly safe when it's in the hands of white men who know what they're doing. Now, you put it in the hands of the American capitalist system where they're going to have affirmative action, they're going to be cutting corners for profits and that sort of thing. Yeah, it's pretty dangerous. One of these days, we may have a Chernobyl here. But it won't be because nuclear power itself is bad. It's because the people who are running it are idiots and niggers and general useless rubbish.
Demand number 8, racial and gender equal rights amendment.
I thought women and niggers and Mexicans and left-handed lesbian Eskimos have equality. Actually, they have more than equality in this society. And I can tell you, being a white male, that you really wonder what they're thinking about here, if anything. It's just like it's something they just threw in. It's a standard lefty, hippy-dippy demand. These people have already won in all of the social areas. They've got their abortion, they've got their racial and gender equality, they've got their bugger boys, they've got their porno and the movies, they've got every damn thing they ever wanted, socially speaking, and we see the result of it.
Demand number 9, possibly related, open borders migration. Anyone can travel anywhere to work and live.
They've already got that. Obama has ordered for the ICE to halt deportations.
I don't think they're traveling just to work and live. I think they're traveling to steal from us and ruin everything.
Yeah, they're trying to get on a white man's back and ride. That's why they come here.
But at least they'll be equal, you know, if they get demand number 8 passed.
Well, there is no equality, not really. I mean, even in these liberals' wonder world, if they ever get it, there's not going to be equality.
Demand number 10, bring American elections up to international standards of a paper ballot precinct counted and recounted in front of an independent and party observers system.
That actually wouldn't be a bad idea to eliminate all the massive vote fraud that goes on with these electronic voting machines, which is why it's never going to happen.
Demand number 11, immediate across-the-board debt forgiveness for all. Debt forgiveness of sovereign debt, commercial loans, home mortgages, home equity loans, credit card debt, student loans, and personal loans now. All debt must be stricken from the books. World Bank loans to all nations, bank-to-bank debt, and all bonds and margin call debt in the stock market, including all derivatives or credit default swaps. All $65 trillion of them must also be stricken from the books. And I don't mean debt that is in default. I mean all debt on the entire planet, period.
Well, that actually might, well, wouldn't work. What it would do would be to crash the whole system, but that may be what we have to do. The economy right now is in such a completely, totally screwed up state that eventually it may be what we're going to have to do is, in essence, reboot the whole system with something like this. But that doesn't mean it's going to be a good thing. Eventually, someone's going to have to hit the reset button and start us all over at zero again on the debt thing, because the money supply is simply going to run out, or it's going to become so inflated that for all practical purposes, there is no more money and the system is going to reset itself. But it might do so through some kind of crash that really does send us all back to the Middle Ages. And I know we right-wingers tend to fantasize about that, but really, when you think about it, it's not what anyone in his right mind really wants. I mean, do you really want an infant mortality rate of 50% and so forth and so on, and all those lovely diseases that we used to have coming back because there's no health care affordable and so forth and so on? Something like these idiots are describing is probably going to happen whether we want it or not, but it's not going to be a solution to anything. It's going to be a cause of infinitely more misery.
Demand number 12, outlaw all credit reporting agencies.
Good. That actually is not a bad idea, and once again, it's never going to happen, but I'm glad they threw that in there.
Demand number 13, allow all workers to sign a ballot at any time during a union organizing campaign or at any time that represents their yay or nay to having a union represent them in collective bargaining or to form a union. These demands will create so many jobs it will be completely impossible to fill them without an open borders policy.
Sounds like this program was designed by some college freshman or some high school kid. Basically, this is the level of thought behind the left. If you ever wondered exactly what it is all these assholes want, well, this is pretty much it. But again, you got to bear in mind that this isn't really a left-wing insurgency of any kind, this whole Occupy Wall Street thing. It's Obama's re-election campaign. Already you've got your major Democratic unions stepping in. You've got Democrat politicians showing up at their little camps in New York City. And you also notice that while they're running around and screaming and yelling and waving signs, they're not really doing any damage or having any effect at all on the stock market or the billionaires that they're supposed to be after. For example, about 2 weeks ago, they were talking about marching into the wealthy neighborhoods of Manhattan and picketing the billionaires' homes and all that sort of stuff, actually bothering them where they live. That idea got shot down in a hurry. these people and their little demonstrations are controlled. They're not going to be allowed to bother or annoy anybody with power, and that's the way it always works. We got to bear in mind, those of us who claim that maybe we can somehow stage a revolution in the streets, this system is designed to withstand and ignore exactly that. In 1969, they had 500,000 people marching in Washington, D.C., demanding an end to the Vietnam War, and the president simply packed up and went off to Camp David, and the Pentagon shut down, and they gave everybody, you know, the weekend off, and they just ignored the whole thing. American liberal democracy is designed to put up with things like this as a valve to let the people let off steam, but I can't think of anything in the past 50 years that has been seriously affected policy-wise or financially or anything like that by any of this running around in the streets waving signs. It's just something that Americans are allowed to do by the system in order to let off steam. There's only one way that actual change can be brought about, and we know what that is.
Nigga, only thing I want white is my motherfucking toilet paper.
Sally and I recorded that a couple of days ago, and I want to attach a kind of a little PS here to that. Since we spoke a few days ago, the Occupy Wall Street people have been charging downtown in various places around the country, not just New York, but Washington, Raleigh, Atlanta, Seattle, places like that, making nuisances of themselves and lying down in the street and trying to invade office buildings, etc., with the expected results. The police have come along and arrested a whole bunch of them and taken them off to jail, and now the big thing is they're threatening that if the charges aren't dropped, they're going to clog up the court system. Well, I got news for them. Our court system is already clogged up. But anyway, this is a good example of why left-wing and nonviolent revolution of any kind is going to fail in this country, because the system is designed to withstand it. I said earlier that this society doesn't particularly mind if you've got 500,000 people out in the street protesting something or demanding something or trying to be heard. They're just going to be ignored. The next morning will come and all the hundreds of thousands of people will just go away, and then the street sweepers will come along and sweep it all up, and those that have been arrested will get bailed out of jail and get their court dates, and everything goes right back to being exactly what it was. No mass action of the kind that has worked in other countries, admittedly, will ever work here. There will be no Arab Spring in America, because American liberal democracy is designed to absorb and withstand this very kind of tactic. Their policy is simple. They allow people to gather in the streets and have their little tantrums and run amok and maybe smash a few windows, and then the police come along and arrest them, and then it's all over and everybody goes back to the student digs or whatever to pop the top on their beers or smoke their joints. And the next Monday morning, everybody goes back to work or back to class, and nothing has changed. It's been like that for 50 years. Now, why doesn't this type of mass action, which has worked elsewhere in the world, had any effect on liberal democracy in the United States? Well, there's several reasons, but I'll just talk about one tonight. So-called mass action of this type hasn't worked and will not work in the United States because when it gets out of hand and it begins to annoy the people who actually have wealth and power in this country, the police simply move in and arrest them. In other words, the police obey orders. The police serve the function which they are there for, which is to protect and serve the people with wealth and power. Let's look at the possibility that one day these Occupy Wall Streeters or someone similar with about the same numbers suddenly get together and start running around in downtown New York and messing around in the financial district, or maybe running around in downtown Washington, D.C. and invading congressmen's offices and invading the Capitol buildings and smoking joints and pissing on the carpet in the Senate floor and all this sort of stuff, and maybe even jump the fence and go running across White House lawn, etc., etc. But let's say that the Washington, D.C. police and the FBI and the Secret Service and the Capitol Parks police haven't been paid for 6 months because the government has run out of money due to their own incompetence, And on the day that these mobs decide to run amok, they're not there, they're not on duty, or they just plain decide to sit it out and sit in their little booths drinking coffee or something while the mobs start running riot and actually getting into the offices and dragging the bureaucrats and the general scum out of the offices and maybe stringing them up to lampposts and so forth and so on, then you have a revolution. Why? Because the police no longer obeyed orders. This has been the key to every successful revolution in history. The removal of the police and eventually the military as an arm of enforcement of the system. In other words, what I said in the White Book, the loss of the credible monopoly of armed force. People accuse me of being obsessed with the police and the FBI and so forth and so on, but I say again, they are crucial to the potential success of what we are doing. Somehow or other, they have to be removed from the equation. This system will never fall so long as they have their muscle men in the form of the police, the FBI, the Secret Service, the Department of Homeland Security, the military, the Delta Force, all the various forces that the bureaucrats and the people with wealth and power in this country have assembled down through the years in order to protect them and their families and their homes and their wealth and their recreation and their general lifestyles from the people that they victimize. All of these hired guns who are paid to protect the rich and powerful from the consequences of their own behavior. Back around the turn of the 20th century, someone, a reporter I think, once asked J.P. Morgan what he would do if the American people ever did rebel against him and his fellow megabankers. And Morgan replied, "I would simply hire half of the population to shoot the other half." What has to happen in order for there to be real change at the top is for both halves of the population, in our case the white population, to agree that no one is going to hire them to shoot the other half. This is why I may sound a bit obsessive at times and maybe harp a little on the topics of cops and FBI and so forth and the day that their direct deposit doesn't come in, because that's going to be our window of opportunity.
I know a fat old policeman, he's always on our street. A fat and jolly red-faced man, he really is a treat. He's too kind for a policeman, he's never known to frown, and everybody says he is the happiest man in town. Upon point duty, he laughs upon his feet. He laughs at everybody when he's walking in the street. He never can stop laughing, he says he's never tried. But once he did arrest a man and laughed until he cried. And then he shut his eyes. He opened his great mouth. It was a wondrous sight. He said, "I must arrest you." He didn't know what for. And then he started laughing until he cracked his jaw. Walking round the town, just shake him by his fat old hand and give him half a crown. His eyes will beam and sparkle, he'll gurgle with delight, and then you'll start him laughing with all his blessed might.
Well, that was bizarre. A while back, I asked people to submit MP3 audio files describing, among other things, how they got into the white nationalist movement to begin with. Now, this wasn't just to give people something to talk about. If we can understand and analyze what straws finally break the camel's back, so to speak, what finally pushes people over the edge and awakens them racially and gets them at least partially committed to the idea of action for change, then maybe we can begin deliberately reproducing these conditions in an effort to speed up the inevitable radicalization process among white people. Anyway, somebody asked Gretchen the librarian how she got involved, so here she is.
I remember hearing about Aryan Nations back in the 80s. I heard about it on a 2020 program. And then a few years later, I went to college. I was given a small pamphlet in an English class because we had a lesson on propaganda. And someone brought in a small pamphlet that talked about the Butler Plan. There were some numbers on that for some hotlines that I never ended up calling because at that point I was terrified that my calls would be recorded on my phone bill and people would know I was calling. But at any rate, I kept that pamphlet. So I had heard of the Butler Plan and I'd heard of Hayden Lake. So some years after college, I was trying to get into graduate school. And initially, I wanted to stay within the basic geographic area that I live, mainly because of family ties and just the difficulty of moving far away. But then I wasn't getting into graduate school, and so at some point, and I don't know quite how I came up with this, I don't know if it was because I was watching the Simpson trials and they were talking about Mark Furman, I don't know if it was because of an article in Art News. I somehow think it was even before all those things happened, I started thinking about, why don't I go to art school in Idaho? So I applied to the University of Idaho, and I also looked into Eastern Washington University. I also wrote to North Idaho College because I was interested in possibly working there. None of those plans panned out, and at around that time, my grandmother became very ill with heart failure, and she needed round-the-clock care. So I ended up having to help her, and I felt very guilty about the idea of going to Idaho because it would certainly entail leaving family. For the last 7 months of her life, my grandmother was acutely ill. And I feel a lot better about the fact I was able to stay home and help her. Then, maybe a year or so after that, I saw in the paper that the Aryan Nations compound at Hayden Lake was being demolished. They had a full-color photo of the compound being destroyed by one of those huge earth-moving shovels that was just tearing it down. And so at that point, I wasn't sure whether there was anything going on in the Northwest anymore. So that was very demoralizing. Then after that, I really had pretty much lost faith in the movement in some respects because I had always followed the movement. I'd heard of various goings-on, but all of these things that happened, I remember the East Side White Pride incident and other incidents, but all of these incidents seemed to be futile. They didn't seem to really help at all. They seemed to make matters worse. So I felt that the only viable plan at all, if there are any, would be the Butler Plan. But I wasn't sure there was anyone really enacting the Butler Plan. I had heard vaguely of the order, although that was not well publicized where I live, and so for a long time I never quite understood what they were doing. I had also heard vaguely at one point of the Turner Diaries, but I wasn't really quite sure for quite a long time what that was. At any rate, I started to feel that the best thing I could do was just settle down and get married, and I attempted to do that and didn't quite work. And then I was depressed for a while and really felt that our cause was really hopeless. Felt that way for maybe a couple of years. Then with the latest presidential election, I started to become reinterested in the cause. was on YouTube, and I discovered Nordic Jawa, and he was talking about A Distant Thunder, and I looked that book up, and I read it, and around the time Harold was starting his podcast, just looking up his books online, I often believe people who are meant to find the podcast will find it. I found it very early, and I've managed to listen to all of the podcasts. Books and the situation in the world and the podcasts have really reinvigorated my interest in Northwest migration and faith in the possibility of this plan. So thank you for listening.
Now we have a comment on one of our Radio Free Northwest from Mr. Solomon Goldstein.
Mr. Goldstein says, "That is the most racist / anti-Semitic website I have ever seen. What you're doing should be illegal." I thought this was worthy of a response because it is very rare that I ever agree with a Jew, but Mr. Goldstein, I think you might be right. The Northwest Front website speaks ill of many dark-skinned people, and it has a lot of really mean things to say about the Jewish folk. And reading through some of the other comments and articles on this site, I can easily say that Harold Covington be a mean, racist man.
Yeah, I am amazed we get some of these comments to the blog saying, "But you're racists. You can't say that." And there are people who, honest to God, believe that we can't. They think it's illegal. I get comments from Jews and niggers saying they're going to call the police. Anyway, moving right along to more of our emails here.
"Dear Mr. Covington, I'd like you to speak a bit about the necessity for some social programs in a society. To outsiders like me, it appears Americans immediately associate social programs with communism and don't understand the difference between taking care of its own and sheer parasitism. Of course, so far, social programs in our countries have been of the parasitical kind, but that is in line with economical liberalism that allows for big corporate handouts, which is welfare too. But it seems to me that a nation based on race would have to be managed like a family and should take care of its people. Bad luck, aging, and sickness happen, and no one should ever be left out as long as they fill their obligations toward their nation."
First off, I'd like to ask this lady if she was able to get to our northwestfront.org website and if she was able to read our Northwest Constitution, because some of these things are mentioned in there, specifically the right to free education, right to medical care, and this kind of thing. I've lived in Ireland where they had a national health service, and this was in the days before Ireland became a colony of Nigeria. And I can tell you that, yes, to a limited degree, the whole social welfare thing will work if you have an all-white population and if you do not have a permanent welfare-dependent underclass. Now, the Northwest Constitution is intended to make sure that we don't get a welfare-dependent underclass coming into being in the Republic. Instead of a welfare system, what we have is the National Labor Service. In cases of economic hardship or downturn where the private sector isn't fulfilling all the necessary requirements for employment, then the government steps in, but they give people a job, not welfare.
"To whom it may concern, I am glad to find out about the Northwest Front on the internet. I am a married man with two wonderful children, and the idea of my children growing up in a multicultural hellhole where my son will be abused and beaten and my daughter targeted by the race-mixing filth that is all over the media. It's to the point that I am honestly fearful for the future of my children. I, too, have suffered from displacement and job loss because of the cult of diversity. I hope that my family and I can make it to the Northwest, and once I have gainful employment, I would love to contribute to the cause. How does this work, and how do I get involved with the NF?"
Okay, he's asking about the Northwest Front contact process, which I can't recall if I've ever gone into here on the air on Radio Free Northwest, and which in any case has changed somewhat. So let me run that down for you folks. All right, the first step is that we need a name and a postal mailing address from a new internet contact. Now, the address can be a post office box or a PMB number. That's fine, just some place where the post office will deliver mail. Now, the name needs to be a full proper name, not just Joe or Veronica or an acronym from some little Hollywood Nazi group with all the three members, two of whom probably don't even know their members. The post office usually will not deliver mail without a full name. Mail packets are expensive, especially priority mail, and every time one is returned marked undeliverable as addressed, we are out money. and it's more likely just an ICI, as we call it, an idle curiosity inquiry. In other words, the person is a looky-loo trying to get some free stuff, and that's a very common attitude in the movement. Now remember, the NF is the real thing. Paranoia has to stop, and trust has to start somewhere, and it starts with you. If you don't trust us, then we don't trust you. Now, it used to be that your intro packet would not include a copy of the Northwest Migration Manual, otherwise known as the White Book, and we used to charge a $10 fee to send a printed copy of that separately. Now, that's no longer the case. For some time, I made it a kind of a point of pride that we had something in the party that was not available on the Internet, and that you still had to order in print and pay for, like back in the old days. But the situation has now reached the point where I want as much as possible by way of ideas and information out there on the Internet and in print where it will be available and where it can't be seized or bottled up in some way if anything happens to me, either legally or medically. So my policy has changed with the fourth edition of the handbook. It will be available soon on a number of websites, and it will also be available in print on a print-per-order basis. And I will be happy to send anyone in the meantime who emails me at nwnet@earthlinknet a free copy of the White Book in PDF format. Now, this manual is important. You need to read it carefully and study it. It contains the answers that you claim to contact us seeking. Now, the next step after receipt of an individual information and literature packet is Internet or snail mail correspondence. Now, during this period, you will be looked over, first off, for basic compos mentis, and after that, for intelligence, communication skills, presentation, and general personality and cop-on. And then comes chat rooms and possibly phone calls. I do not give out my phone number extensively, because if I did, I would spend 7 or 8 hours per day talking to people on the phone who are essentially calling because they're lonely and they want to chat to a fellow white nationalist. They want to get that long-running monologue out of their head that I referred to in the past, but I don't want you to do it on the phone to me. I want you to do it on an audio file where everybody can hear it. Now, by the way, I never respond to imperious demands that I call a total stranger at such and such a number. I get that a lot. Now, anything you need to say to me can be said via email. And if it can't be said by email, then you probably shouldn't be saying it to a stranger. You will need to give me or the unit leader in your area a short introduction and biography. Anything you say can and will be used for an actual background check, which is unique in the movement. And I don't just mean Googling somebody else's name, although you'd be amazed at just what even that can turn up. Now, in view of who we are and what we envision for the future, it's entirely logical and reasonable for me and other NF people to want to know who the hell we're talking to when we sit down together. A photograph of yourself and your wife, husband, or significant other will be helpful, as well as any children. Suffice it to say that we have, on rare occasions, turned up some unpleasant surprises along that line. Now, I once considered flat out asking for social security numbers, but I recognized that there'd be legitimate security concerns with that. While I don't know you, neither do you know me, and considering all the crap on the internet about me, a request for an SSAN would probably fuel the goat dance and make it worse. Besides, if you really are a federal cop or an SPLC spy of some kind, that could easily be faked. This system is crude and imperfect, and the FBI or whoever could just dummy up a fake background easily, but I intend to force them to do just that. Now, these people are getting paid taxpayer money to violate the Constitution, and I mean to make them work for it. I mean to make them cover all the bases, dot their I's, and cross their T's. Never make anything easier for these people who are spying on us and seek to do us harm. Now, our present vetting system isn't perfect, not at all, and like I said, it could easily be circumvented by anyone who's seriously trying to get close to us in order to do harm. Now, we're doing it for two reasons. A, to get ourselves used to the concept of doing things correctly and competently as revolutionaries, something that white Americans have no previous experience with, and B, to weed out movement kooks and dysfunctionals of the kind whom the late Pam Emmerich described as not cops, not kikes, not spies, just trouble. I'm specifically looking for past movement background. Obviously, we can't and won't disqualify everyone who has ever taken part in another group's activities, just for that reason. but I need to have a general idea of who you've been hanging with on the internet and otherwise, and what kind of movement contaminants and toxicities you may have picked up. Yes, this is important. I need to know what baggage you are bringing to the Northwest Front. And then comes actual meeting. The first meeting will be a one-on-one with myself or some other senior person that I trust to make an evaluation. Now, the idea here is to put a face to the URL and the email address to make sure that you really exist, that you really are white, and that you're not the holy rabbi Hyman Hebelbaum from Temple Schmuckel jacking us around on the internet. Now, crap like that's happened before, although not to me and not to the NF. Now, once someone has been met individually and checked for all the basics, i.e. white skin, no obvious Negroid or Asiatic racial characteristics, no grossly Semitic face, sound mind, not falling down drunk or high, no body odor or tics or obvious indications of instability, so forth and so on, only then do you get invited either to a larger meeting or to participate in an activity cell. Then and then only do you get to meet some of the others. We have a basic rule in the Northwest Front, which I recommend that everybody adopt, both in their political and their personal life. And that basic rule is no strangers walking through the door. At least that's the rule insofar as we can enforce it. And by the way, the one surefire way to blot your copybook with me or anyone in the Northwest Front is to show up at a meeting with a stranger in tow, someone we don't know and have not had time to check. That is how agents and informers are introduced into groups. They get a handle on some guy through some petty criminal offense, and they get him to come to a meeting and bring in this stranger and say, this is good old Joe, you can trust him, blah, 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 I vouch for him, and all of a sudden you got an informer in your group. So that's one rule that... just burn that into your brain. And it's not just with us, like with everybody. If you want somebody to take you seriously, never, 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 never show up at a meeting with a total stranger. Okay, bear in mind that these few simple protocols are the result of many years of bitter experience, including many years of prison time for some of us. Now, those rules are for your protection just as much as ours. Now, everyone listening to this should ideally be involved in some stage of the above process, and if not, you need to get started.
It would be a serious mistake indeed to harbour the impression that our Scottish ancestors spent their hatred and their energies on fighting only the English. In between times, they kept in shape by fighting amongst themselves. Thus it was that in the year 1411, Donald of the Isles, with 10,000 of his fighting men, descended on Dingwall and Inverness to lay claim to the lands of Ross.
And come ye, pray the Hielands, man, come ye all the way. So ye MacDonald and Oz men, as they come in frae Skye away. A drum, a doo, and a tree, and a drum, drum, a doo, drum, cray. And come ye near or near enough, did ye their numbers see? Come tell to me, John Hieland, man, what might their numbers be? Way, a drum, a doo, and a tree, and a drum, drum, a doo, drum, cray. Well, I come in by the Garry land, doon by Nether Haw. I saw MacDonald and Oz men a-marching to Harlaw. Way, a drum, a doo, and a tree, and a drum, a drum, a doo, drum, cray. The Hieland men with their long swords fell in at us, who's there? And they drive back where Lawland men 3 acres breadth or mare. Way, a drum, a doo, and a tree, and a drum, drum, a doo, drum, cray. Lord Ford estate, his brother did say, oh brother, dinna you see? They've driven us back an anchor sight, and we'll be forced to flee. Way, a drum, a doo, and a tree, and a drum, drum, a doo, drum, cray. Oh no, 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 my brother dear, this thing it munna be. You'll tack your good sword in your hand, and you'll gan in with me. Away, drum-a-doo, and a tree, and a drum, drum-a-doo, drum-tray. The first blow that Lord Ford has struck, the sword ran in an hell. The second blow Lord Ford has struck, the great MacDonald fell. Away, drum-a-doo, and a tree, and a drum, drum-a-doo, drum-tray. Stick a cry free among the Hieland men, when they see their leader fall. They carted him and buried him along by Fair Harlaw. Away, drum-a-doo, and a tree, and a drum, drum-a-doo, drum-tray.
Dinanians should spear a gee for them that's gone to war. Just tell them plain and uncomplain they're sleeping at Harlaway. A drum a do and a tree and a drum. Drum a do drum tray. Way a drum a do and a tree and a drum. Drum a do drum tray.
Okay, I'm running way long this week, so I need to talk about a couple more things real quick, slip you guys your third music break, and then wind it up. I got an email today from a supporter which was rather long and impassioned, and which was of a kind that I've received often enough before. I won't read it on the air here, but the upshot of it is that this guy wants to know why we are using Facebook and YouTube to promote the Northwest Front, and do I not know that Facebook and YouTube and every other major feature on the internet is all run by Jews, which, yes, I do know that. And he concludes that, therefore, because we make use of these facilities and the internet in general, we must all be part of the Jewish world conspiracy, which was, of course, proven recently because I was endorsed by a Jewish lunatic on YouTube. Now, this guy emailing me was one of our more frenetic comrades, which is a polite way of saying he has a few screws loose, but just because you're crazy doesn't necessarily mean you're stupid or wrong, and he has enough of a point to where I think I need to address his concerns, as the uppies say, because I'm sure something of the kind has occurred to a lot of people. Not that I'm part of the world Jewish conspiracy. If that's true, I sure wish to hell the rabbi would send me my back pay. But yes, it is true that we are building a lot of our present work on something that's Jew-controlled, and which, theoretically at least, is susceptible to interception, spying, into the pulling of the plug overnight if we start to really piss off the chosen ones. And yes, that happens fairly regularly. The kikes do try and pull the plug on us on the internet all the time, and I'll give you one example. About 7 years ago, I inherited a Yahoo group called the Truth Commission from a guy in Georgia named J.D. Greer who didn't want to mess with it anymore, and it's a group that at one stage had about 400 members, but which I had to reconstitute from scratch, recreate, and start recruiting new people again at least 6 times because this one heeb kept stalking the group and complaining to Yahoo. Eventually, he either lost interest and wandered away, or else Yahoo got tired of his bullshit because the group's still up and has about 200 members now, but it's moribund because nobody uses Yahoo groups anymore. They all ran off to MySpace and then to Facebook. Now, that's a pity because I always liked Yahoo groups. They were quick to set up, easy to use, and they provided all the communications facilities that a small group of people needed, including chat rooms and voice conferencing. But in about 3 years, they've become almost as obsolete as newspapers. And in another year or two, Yahoo will probably quietly pull the remaining groups offline rather than bother to maintain a service that nobody's using anymore. Just these past couple of weeks, the Jews have tried to silence all of our videos on YouTube, especially stalking and hunting down and screaming at the top of their lungs, complaining to YouTube about the 2 Colonel House NVA attack videos. But also, of course, about all the other videos containing excerpts from Radio Free Northwest or other Northwest Front stuff that have been popping up all over the internet like dandelions. Now, those of you who are on the Northwest Revolution list know how Colonel House and I have responded to that. Now, suffice it to say that no one can actually control the internet, and if someone wants to be there, he's going to be there. Our videos are still up on YouTube, and they are increasing in number and in viewership. So I really don't think there's any worry about the Northwest Front or the Northwest idea completely disappearing off the net, no matter what happens to me personally. Look, guys, it's like this. We live in a world that is run by Jews. That's not paranoia, and it's not conspiracy theory. It's simple fact. I get it, and all of us should as well. But just because these people have been conspiring against us for millennia and continue to do so, that does not mean that they're omniscient and all-powerful and that they are impossible to defeat. The Jews are eminently defeatable. People defeat the Jews and they defeat the United States government every day. Just this week, the Palestinians forced the Jews to release over 1,000 Arab prisoners in exchange for one Israeli soldier. Since the Jews believe that they are the chosen of God and that they are 1,000 times better than anyone else, that makes sense. And after almost 5 years of patient politics and pressure, the Palestinians were able to compel the Jews to live up to their own belief system and let their people go. Others in the past have defeated and thwarted the Jews. For example, Hitler may not have killed 6 million Jews in real life, but I'll tell you who probably did. Joseph Stalin, although it took him almost 30 years to do it. Now, the fact is that these days, their power, which, granted, is still damned formidable, nevertheless isn't what it used to be 50, 30, or even 20 years ago. 20 years ago, my novels could never have been published at all. I know, because 20 years ago I was trying to publish them without success. Then along came the internet and print-per-order publishing, and the whole thing became too big and too widespread and too profitable for internet entrepreneurs for the Jews to micromanage and control every step of the way. And what has happened is that they've lost control of what was at one time their second most important media monopoly after the control of newspapers, by which I mean the publication of books and the flow of ideas through books. Now, of course, this happened as part of an overall media revolution that made book publishing a lot less important in the scheme of things, because nobody reads books anymore, but you get my drift. Life and events and the march of technology have all gotten too big and too wild for the Hebes to control anymore, at least not with the type of absolute iron hand that they used to hold over the old media. Now, whether we like it or not, and I don't like it, we live in an age of mass electronic communication, be it through internet or cell phones or text messages or cable TV or whatever. Now, this makes a lot of us sad, including me. I used to hate liberal newspapers like the Raleigh News and Observer and the Seattle PI with passion, and in a way I've gotten my revenge. They're gone now, completely replaced by the internet, and I'm still here. The Seattle Times is still coming out, about 10 pages of actual news, and the rest of it's ads. Now, my guess is that within 5 years, almost all of the printed newspapers in America will be gone, except for the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, and the Washington Post. And everyone will get their information, such as it is, from the internet or off cable TV news. Now, like most old-timers, I'm sad to see newspapers go. But the fact remains that, like any political movement, we still have to communicate with one another and with the people we are trying to win over to our ideas and save. Now, effectively speaking, that means using these things like email and Facebook and podcasts and cell phones and so forth and so on. There simply isn't any way around it. Unless we want to sit at the mouth of the cave and try to send one another smoke signals or beat messages to one another with tom-toms, we have to use these things to communicate. And yes, that means that they may well be intercepted. So the only thing we can do is to always bear in mind that the secret police are listening to or reading everything we say. Make sure we don't say anything electronically that might give the enemy reason to defunctionalize us. And then we ignore them and drive on. I know that to some people this sounds irresponsible and fatuous, but once we bear in mind that they are listening, we simply ignore them and drive on, because when all is said and done, it's the only thing we can do. Now, I admit that there are times when I've been tempted to see if it's possible to chuck the internet altogether and just go back to the old ways, a post office box and a mailed monthly bulletin. But efficiency aside, I'm not even sure that that would be possible. The post office is talking now about possibly going bankrupt and shutting down sometime this winter because nobody's writing letters anymore. They're sending emails or text messages. Time for one of Harold's little historical anecdotes. If it gives you guys any comfort, remember that the Tsarist Okhrana watched Russian anarchists and Lenin's Bolsheviks like hawks for almost 50 years and assembled the most comprehensive and intrusive secret police files ever created up until that time. But when the time came in 1917, they still lost, because when all was said and done, they were serving a corrupt regime which had become paralyzed with disease and indecision and bureaucracy and economic incompetence. Sound familiar? When it is time for America to fall, America will fall. And all the intercepted emails in the world won't make any difference.
Time to every purpose under heaven. To everything, turn, turn, turn. There is a season, turn, turn, turn. And a time to every purpose under heaven. A time to build up, a time to break down. A time to dance, a time to mourn. A time to cast away stones. A time to gather stones together. To everything, turn, turn, turn. There is a season, turn, turn, turn. And a time to every purpose under heaven. A time of love, a time of hate. A time of war, a time of peace. A time you may embrace. A time to refrain from embracing.
I'm going to close this week with some bad news, although for reasons which some of you will be aware of, I can't get too specific about the details. This story is still unfolding, and I'm sorry, but it's not going to end well. About the best outcome we can hope for is somehow to save one man from total destruction by the beast, and I'm not speaking metaphorically here. We have a comrade here in the homeland, a very fine and dedicated man who is retired military. Like Edgar Steele, this man loyally and faithfully served the very beast that is about to destroy him and his family for many years of his life. Up until about 3 months ago, this man had a good job, a good home, a wife and family, and as near as any of us could know, he had a reasonably good life. Then it all came crashing down. This is the part that I can't talk about, and I mean that literally. I can't talk about it because I don't know all of the blow-by-blow details, just the Cliff Notes version, but to make a long and very American story short, a series of catastrophes struck this man and his family. So far as I know, and I may be wrong, he is, for the moment, still hanging on to his job in the house by the skin of his teeth, but he has lost everything else in his life, and he is in extreme danger of his own personal destruction by America. I wish I could claim that this was some kind of FBI fabrication like the Edgar Steele case or some kind of deep, dark, politically motivated conspiracy on the part of the Jews to get this man because of his political and racial beliefs, but I can't. This isn't any kind of special thing. This is just America being America. The simple and brutal fact of the matter is that our friend and comrade simply drew the short straw like white people do periodically in this society. He slipped and fell into the mincing, mangling machine that is the United States of Barack Obama. He's the wrong color and the wrong gender, and so he doesn't get any free passes, and unless he's very lucky indeed, he's going to be swallowed up by the beast. One of the most horrifying things about life in these United States is the suddenness with which a white man or woman can lose everything. You can be rolling right along, all the wheels on your wagon, everything apparently running smoothly, your family safe and well, and your life apparently under control, when all of a sudden you hit a bump. Only in Obama's America, life's little bumps often turn out to be tank traps. You lose your job without warning, or someone in your family has a medical emergency, or the bank decides to squeeze that adjustable rate mortgage you so foolishly signed 10 years ago. Or you become entangled in some way with the so-called justice system, or for any reason you become entangled with attorneys. And then all of a sudden it's not only all gone, all 20 or 30 years of it, but you yourself are facing bankruptcy, death in some flea-ridden nursing home without health care, or, quite possibly, personal, violent physical destruction by America, for no reason that you can understand. It all happens so fast, and your whole life is lying in burning wreckage by the roadside. One of the most horrifying stories in the entire history of our movement is that of a man named George David Lube, who one morning in 1991 went out to the grocery store with his wife to pick up a few things, and who 20 years later still lies writhing in living hell as we speak. The thought of Lube's last normal morning of ordinary life on this earth haunts me for some reason, before he and his wife got in the car to make that fatal trip to the grocery store. Our ancestors believed in all kinds of omens, owls and ravens and banshees and comets and bloody rain and whatnot. I've always wondered if Lube saw any omens that morning as he got into the car for the grocery run. Sorry, I'm rambling again. This is America under liberal democracy. America giveth and America taketh away. There is no rhyme or reason to it, and there's no defense except, of course, the one I've been talking about for years and which we won't use. This is what has happened to our friend. His number came up. He drew the short straw. And as bad as it is for him, it is also poignantly terrible for those of us who must now do what white Americans do every time this happens, in whatever form, to someone close to us. We must simply sit by and watch in horror, utterly powerless to do anything while the beast slowly ingests this man and his family. Because that's what we are. We are financial and physical and spiritual livestock, and our purpose is to be milked and sheared and eventually slaughtered in order to feed the beast and keep it alive. When the demon farmer comes to drag one of us to the chopping block to provide blood, to slake his thirst and to feast on our flesh, we bleat and cackle and oink and moo a bit like all livestock does, and then we stick our noses back into the trough and go on as if nothing has happened. Until it's our turn. It doesn't have to be this way, people. We can stop the demon farmer from coming for us and dragging us away to the slaughter ever again. But there is no way that anyone is going to do it for us. We have to do it, and we have to find some courage from somewhere. It's there, people. All the courage and resolution and strength that we need, right there inside of us. All we must do is to see it within us and use it against the evil men and women who rule us, and we can stop this horror. Well, our time is up, and so that's it for this week's edition of Radio Free Northwest. This program is brought to you by the Northwest Front, Post Office Box 4856, Seattle, Washington 98194, or you can go to the party's website at www.northwestfront.org. This is Harold Covington, and I'll see you next week. Until then, Sasha on the Bun. Freedom.